Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show being brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Bucknell basketball, now 6-2 in the Patriot. They have won four games in a row. We're joined by the head coach of the Bison, Dave Paulson. Dave, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be on the show.
All right, Dave, you did something, and I saw this in a volleyball sense, and Russ Rose, of course, is the gold standard in coaching in women's volleyball, as we all know. He made some changes in his lineup back in October, and he took a couple lumps here and there, and he did so because the idea, as he explained to me, was, hey, look, I think at the end this is my best group. Well, in the end it was his best group. He won the national championship. You did a lot of the same thing where you decided, I want to do this, this, and this because down the road it would make me a better, give me a better basketball team. Are you seeing the fruits of some of those moves come to fruition now?
Well, at least right now, Steve, I've been in this long enough to know you. You know, when you're lying on the rest on 18, 19, 20-year-old males, you can't ever draw overwhelming conclusions.
Right.
But certainly, you know, since we inserted Stephen Brown in the starting lineup, we've won four in a row. Now, certainly a lot of other things were factors in it. But, you know, I think more than anything, we're continuing to develop our bench and our depth, and that's really paid off. And pulling the trigger on some of the younger guys, has paid off. And then some other guys coming off the bench have really played well, you know, in off-the-bench roles. So, it certainly has worked out in the last four games, that's for sure.
How difficult is it to get a read on a guy that they thrive when they start and not so much when they come off the bench, or flip it, they actually thrive when they come off the bench, but starting it takes them a little bit to come out of the gate? How difficult is that to gauge guy to guy for you?
Well, you know, it is a little bit difficult to gauge. And part of it, I think, like the guys who say they can't come off the bench, to be honest, I think that's a cop-out, you know?
I agree with it. And we try
to stress, you know, it doesn't matter who starts, it matters who finishes. There's some guys, though, that I would say function a little bit better coming off the bench because maybe they don't have as much, quote-unquote, pressure on them, or they have a chance to sit back and kind of analyze the game. Or maybe their team doesn't game plan for them. So I think there's more merit in some guys play better coming off the bench than starting. I don't really buy the other thing. It is, you know, part of it is, too, is that what we try to stress to our guys is not just about you, it's about the whole team dynamic, and we got to have a balance. So if we got a ball-hawking, defensive-oriented guard, you got to want to make sure you got somebody who's a little bit better outside shooter to go with them. You know, you don't want to play two of the exact same guys at the exact same time, necessarily. You want to have some balance between guys who are maybe a little more defensively-oriented, guys who are a little more offensively-oriented.
19 assists on 32 baskets. What does that tell you?
Well, I think the guys are finding a hot hand. I think they're unselfish. You know, what I found as impressive was only 7 turnovers. You know, and we're getting that number down to where it needs to be. And obviously, Chris Haas, you know, was just named Patriot League Player of the Week. He had a great week. He had 28 against Boston U and 26 against Loyola. But what I liked is we had 6 other guys with 8 points or more. So, you know, Stephen Brown had 15 against Boston U, but then J.C. Schell, John Azzanero, Nana Fowle, and Corey Starkey all had 8 points, and Stephen Casper at 9. And so that's the kind of balance and depth throughout the lineup that I really like.
I want to talk about getting the ball to the shooting pocket. When you watch Kentucky play, and Kentucky obviously defensively with their length is superior. You and I both know that, Dave. Harrison's a good point guard, but he doesn't get the ball in good spots for them to score. And I think it's one of the reasons that you don't see Kentucky scores up in the 70s and 80s consistently. Do you have guys that do a good job of getting the ball right to the shooting pocket that lead you into some good shots?
I tell you, you must have sat in a couple of my practices, because nothing drives me crazy than guys who don't throw the pass to the shooting pocket, you know, because it is, it's such a subtle thing. A shooter likes to get it in rhythm. And you know, especially young players don't understand how important it is, and they throw the ball at their knees or up above their shoulders. You know, I think certainly, you know, when Chris Haas is shooting the way he was, his shooting pocket is about 12 feet wide. But in all seriousness, I think our guys have done a good job of delivering the ball in the right spot at the right time away from the defense. And that's something, again, that it has gotten better over the course of the season.
Incredible. And now let's get to pace of play. You ring up 92, and I talked about the 19 assists and on 32. But you're not giving up a lot of points either, Dave. So what are you getting defensively? How well are you doing on switches and understanding concepts when you need to have them?
Well, we're getting better. You know, I thought we defended very well against against Loyola. Boston U is an incredibly talented offensive team. They came in making 9.5 threes a game. We held them to 4 threes, so we did a good job in that regard. We held them a decent percentage from the floor. We fouled way too much, and that's, you know, that's one of the worst things, that, you know, and I've really prided myself with our teams on not fouling people, and we foul way too much. So that's probably the biggest area that can, you know, like I said, hey, what can we improve on today? You know, you're not going to get a lot quicker in a day. You're not going to get a lot better maybe in your rotations in a day. You're also not going to get four more guys who are 6'9", 240 in a day. You can stop fouling today. It's just a matter of choosing to do so. And that, you know, to be very honest with you, that's frustrating. You know, like Boston U shot 30 free throws on Saturday. We shot 16. And that's not all attributable to being on the road in terms of officiating. You know, we're playing so aggressively defensively and doing a really good job. We did a great job taking away key actions, but then, you know, we're so exuberant to defend it properly or to stop a guy from scoring that we're committing fouls. So that's probably the biggest area that I think we can and need to get better at, you know, instantaneously.
How are they doing as a young group of understanding that each game has its own personality? You know, because you understand that the only thing you can take care of is Wednesday with Lehigh, for example. How well are they doing with that?
Well, again, the last four games have done great, you know, but that is the ever challenge. And you know, like we try to say every time, hey, this game's got to be about the way we practice, not the way, you know, whatever the team is, the way they practice. It's got to look like our practice session. It's got to, the game's got to be played in the value structure that we think is important. And we got to assert our will on the game. And that's, you know, easier said than done. And that's the thing with a young team, understanding how important your level of focus is every single possession. Again, like I said, the last four games, we've done a great job with it, and we just got to continue.
You will end the first half of the conference season coming up on Wednesday with Lehigh at home, and then you start the second cycle on Saturday at home with Colgate. It's a little quick preview of what you've seen from Lehigh so far in DVDs.
Well, Lehigh, you know, they're very, very talented. They got, you know, probably the best center in the conference, and Tim Kempton, his father, was, you know, a great player at Notre Dame back in the day. And, you know, he's like one of these guys, you know, growing up around the games, just got a great feel. Back to the basket moves, post-up game, but, you know, pick and pop. They've got a dynamic freshman point guard, Karan Ross, and then, you know, they space the floor with good players, and they've won three in a row. And they're statistically they're the best defensive team in the league. So they're it's interesting. We might do things a little differently, but we're pretty similar in our approaches. So it's not going to be a lot of gimmicks in the game on Wednesday. It's you know, as we're going to tell our guys in your practice in a few minutes, it's going to be who wins the most turf battles. You know, we keep their point guard out of the paint or he gets in there at will. You know, we stop Kempton from getting the ball 4 feet from the basket. He's going to get it 6 or 7 feet from the basket. You know, that times 70 defensive possessions, times 70 offensive possessions, that's what's going to determine the game. But it's going to be a pretty straightforward, you know, fairly similar style teams playing out there on Wednesday night.
Yeah, one final thing, and I know you have to get to practice, but people don't realize when you've gone through this many, many times, there aren't many secrets left anymore in terms of what the other guy does when you're in league play. There just aren't. Yeah, Dave.
No, I lost you there. Yeah, there's no secrets. You know, and now, like, now we have the technology. We get every game of every team that every team plays, you know, and everyone's got their little nuances and wrinkles. But, you know, we played Loyola the other day, and they'd run 22 plays in their previous three games. It's like, guys, it evolves into three basic concepts. Here's how we're going to cover these concepts. Now you got to go out and play. So there's not a lot of secrets, and it's about who executes when you get to conference play.
Hey, Dave, good run. Good luck. Keep it going. Back-to-back games at Soika this week, Wednesday and Saturday. Good luck on both.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
All right, Dave Paulson, head basketball coach Bucknell. We'll come back. Kevin will tell you what he's driving this week as we continue here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
With no bones in to your neighborhood, who are you going to call?
Snowbusters!
And we've got the Snowbusters right here at Sunbury Motors Kia.
Tracks in an all-wheel drive 2015 Sportage LX starting at
$22,389.
And we have a great inventory to choose from. Or how about our blizzard-busting 2015 all-wheel drive Sereno starting at
$24,983
with 0% APR financing for up to 60 months. And we've got 27 to choose from. Remember, all new Kias come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty.
Come see the Snowbusters
at Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip at Hummel's Wharf
or at sunburymotors.com.
SMC. Selling more cars, satisfying more customers for 100 years.
Tax and tags extra. All applicable Kia customer rebates apply. CAMF bonus cash and financing to well-qualified customers.
Insuring your business is serious stuff. You don't need gimmicks or cutesy mascots or punchlines. You certainly don't want red tape. You just want the right coverage at the right price. We're as serious about insuring your business as you are about running it. Selective. Response is everything.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at prettyinsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by Pretty Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. By the way, we'll be in the Purdy golf tournament again this year and do the show out there. We're looking forward to it. Kevin, you're driving. Check out Kevin's Facebook page. What a car he's got this week.
The 2014 Hyundai Veloster is what we're featuring this week, and it's a three-door. I believe me, I had to look twice to make sure it was right, but there's a slightly hidden door in the back that makes it easier to access the back seat. It's a compact vehicle that's a six-speed. It has a lot of great features, including navigation, the big screen, the Dimension sound system. But the best part about it is not only is it fun to drive, but you're going to get about 30 miles to the gallon average. That's highway and or city. Highway driving is even going to be better with the 2014 Hyundai Veloster, and it's going to cost you around $20 right now with some of the specials that are available from Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury. Check out the Veloster, as Steve said, on my Facebook page or at Kevin Herr on Twitter.
That is Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, it's 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right. Bill Belichick came out swinging on Saturday. You know, how accurate he is on research and things like that, I really don't care. After a while, you know what? If you stick yourself in the fetal position and say, well, okay, you know, kick us, kick us, kick us, you will continue to be kicked. And if you just come out and look at everybody and say, you know what? Guess what? We're not taking it anymore. Go for it. I'm fine with that. It's a football. And the bottom line is the Indianapolis Colts didn't tackle it, and they didn't throw it well enough, and they didn't do a lot of things well enough in that game. They were flat out beat 45-7 in the game. Once again, I am not, and you know, I may have grown up in New England, and my brother, by the way, I checked out. I said, you know, because I grew up in Enfield, Connecticut, which is right on the Massachusetts-Connecticut border. You know how much snow they're expecting?
24 inches is the last I heard. Somewhere between 24 and 36.
33.8. Oh, boy. How about that one?
Oh, boy.
33.8. I mean, that's unbelievable. Wow.
Does he have room to put it anywhere?
No, but I laughed when they were talking about about, you know, where are they going to put the snow in New York? They have rivers, you know. They also have Long Island. They have rivers, a sound, an ocean. They have plenty of places to put the snow.
That's an excellent point.
It's not really an issue. Now, you're going to need, obviously, some... It's tight driving in there to begin with. You know, I just drove there, 3 weeks ago I was driving there?
I think that's about right.
And I drove into New York. I didn't mess around. I said, look, the heck with this. And that's how I did it. But, yeah, where do they go with it? They have actually places to put it, which is interesting. They do. All right. Give us a call, 800-795-9565. But, I mean, what Belichick did the other day, if you hate the Patriots, you're going to hate what he said. If you like the Patriots, you're going to like what he said. If you're neutral, you're going to sit back and say, you know what? The dude doesn't want to be kicked around anymore. Enough. And that's what he did. And same thing with Brady. You can just kind of tell they've kind of had it. And are we going to sit around and talk about inflated footballs all week or talk about the game? And that was the point I brought up earlier. You know, these are not war correspondents wearing helmets in really dangerous, serious areas. It's a football game. This is the equivalent of a speeding ticket. Okay?
There is one thing, though, that I was a little confused about. Why did he feel the need to go through a scientific explanation on Saturday? I was surprised by that because I kind of figured the last comments he made on it were going to be the last comments he made on it. I didn't expect him to have another news conference
because
to discuss anything.
Because you know why? Gets sick of being in the fetal position and getting kicked by everybody. And he also, I think, wanted to go out there and want at the same time, you know, after Brady's press conference, kind of sat there and went, you know what, the heck with this. I'm going to protect him and my entire organization. Let's just go out and do it. Good for him. Now, if he's right, wrong, and different, I have no idea if they did anything right or wrong. But you know what? I agree with the approach. I think he looked around and he said, the heck with this. I'm sick of being... We're not going to sit here in the fetal position and get kicked over a stupid football. And I think that that has a lot to do with what he did the other day. Can you blame him?
No, but it's un-Belichick-like. Not that I'm complaining. Yeah. Not that I'm complaining about that. I just found it unusual for him to do that.
Well, it was unusual for him to do it because he looked around and said, you know what? I'm sick of this. And I don't blame him. Now, I don't know if he's right, wrong, if his science is good, bad, indifferent. But after a while, they're not even going to release the results of this until after the Super Bowl. Now, why is this taking so long? This should have been wrapped up by Thursday. And I don't want to go into, we're going to interview 295 people in the Patriots organization. What? Just pick out the 8 people you need. Talk to the officials. Figure it out. You can have it done by Friday. I'm talking about last Friday. The heck with this.
Well, do you really need to interview the head groundskeeper? I mean, is he really going to have information on it? Listen, well, I think the equipment manager are the guys you need to talk to.
That's the problem with these fraud investigations. And they are. You know, when you start bragging about how many people you talk to, I look at you and go, hey, look. Don't be a fraud. Just look at me. Numbers don't impress me. Talk to the people involved. Okay? It's almost like they're trying to talk to everybody involved first, then talk to Brady last so they can catch him in something. It's like, just talk to these people. Figure it out. They should have had the thing wrapped up by Friday, and it should have been in the rearview mirror by now. Instead, all they're doing is prolonging it. Oh, will it be good for ratings? What are you going to get? Another 1.5 rating points? Really? What's that going to do? You're going to get a 49 or 50 anyway. What's the difference between that and a 51?
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Our thanks to Todd Zalecki from MLB.com, who covers the Phillies, who joined us in the 3:30 half hour. To Dave Paulson, the head basketball coach at Bucknell, who joined us in the 4 o'clock half hour. Later this week, Icky Woods rejoins us. Wayne Larrabee, the play-by-play voice of the Green Bay Packers, who also, by the way, worked Westwood One yesterday, and Coach K winning his 1,000th. Mike Krzyzewski was here in June of 2011. He had so much respect for Joe Paterno that in order to do the segment with Reese Davis, and it was a one-hour special that was done with the two winningest coaches in the history of their respective sports, Joe in college football, Mike Krzyzewski in college basketball, that he showed so much respect that he came up here and did the show here. And in talking afterward, Jay Billis, and I'd never met Jay Billis before, and I said to him, I said, you know what really, I said, I'd never had been in the same room with him until today. And what really struck me about him is how incredibly funny he is. What a great sense of humor he has in his own way. I said, he had me laughing left and right at his one-liners. And he said, yeah, it's something a lot of people don't know about. He says, because I was about to tell you the same thing. I said, what's that? He says, I never knew Joe Paterno was that funny. He said, Joe had me just laughing left and right with his one-liners. I said, oh, yeah. I said, he gets the needle out. I said, and the needle gets on a roll. He says, oh, yeah. Well, they both have been, over the years, adaptable in their careers. And, you know, everyone can kid around about, you know, Joe 3 yards in a cloud of dust and so forth, and he had a preferred way of playing. Yeah, he had a preferred way of playing, but when he had Todd Blackledge, he threw the ball. In fact, the first national champion to throw for more yards than to run. When he had defense and kicking in 86, that's how he won that championship. When he had tons of offense in 94, won it that way. In 5 and 8, he won it with a spread offensive attack of mobile quarterbacks and Robinson and Clark when they won the Big Tens. And then in those 2 years, combined to go 22-3. Mike Krzyzewski, very much the same way. Mike Krzyzewski had a certain way of playing early in his career. And he won in that way. And he did so, and he wasn't crazy about one-and-dones. and really stayed away from the one-and-done player. But then he realized as time went, he said, you know what, I'm going to have to do something about this. And then he, too, started getting some of the one-and-done players. Parker, of course, last year, unfortunately got hurt with Milwaukee this year. Good player, Jabari Parker. He's got Okafor this year. Okafor's not coming back for another year. Okafor's a fabulous player. But he's understood that you need to recruit that guy, get him in there, play, and that Duke is going to be and keep a nucleus of guys who fall into the old way of doing things at Duke that work. He also has been an incredible plus for USA basketball. What he has done with USA basketball, NBA players want to play for him. And that's important. NBA players want to play for him. Conversely, he's also taken some NBA concepts that he's learned from working with them and put them into his own program at Duke. Also at the same time, you take a head coaching job, a little different path than Joe. Joe was an assistant coach for years, for 16 years. But Joe's first year and a half was a struggle. He took over a 5-5 program from Rip Engel, and he went 5-5. And then he lost his opener the next year, and then that's when he went to Miami, made the changes, and put in the players he recruited one by one. But he got them into that Miami game on that Friday night down in the Orange Bowl. He was 5-6 after 11 games. People not enamored with his first year. Mike Krzyzewski, after 3 years at Duke, the fans absolutely were not enamored. There was a lot of pressure on Tom Butters, then the athletic director at Duke, to make a change and get rid of him. And if we had been in a Twitter message board talk show world back in the early 80s when he was trying to do this, late 70s, early 80s. You have to wonder how far he could have taken it. Now, he recruited that great recruiting class with the aforementioned Jay Billis, Johnny Dawkins, two other guys in that group that were fabulous. Mark Allery was the third one, and I can't for the life of me remember the fourth one. Was that Gene Banks, maybe, out of Philadelphia? Maybe it was Gene Banks. And that was the foundation of what he wanted to do. But after 3 years, fans at Duke wanted him gone. Just like Dean Smith after 4 years at North Carolina, they wanted him gone. That was a road trip they made back from Wake Forest. And there he was swinging, hanging in effigy. People can be cruel. Certain fans can be cruel. But then Mike Krzyzewski recruited his own guys, got them out there, started, you know, and then they got that run, and I think they got, what, to the 86 national, the 86 Final Four. And that really was the jumping point to get Duke basketball rolling at that stage. When he got to that, and I think it was at Reunion Arena in Dallas. It was the year, I think, Louisville won with Purvis Ellison. And that's what got them rolling, was that recruiting class, that group. And because Tom Butters was smart enough, I mean, you always have to have somebody in your organization that has foresight, that sees the big picture, understands growing pains, but also sees what you're trying to do. You have to have somebody that has foresight. It's the organizations and the groups that get into trouble that are constantly reacting to something. You have to have a big picture vision while taking care of all the little things on a day-by-day basis. Tom Butters had that vision. Mike Krzyzewski had a vision. Tom Butters shared it. They could both see where they were going. in reality, Krzyzewski was never really in trouble. But with the fans, he was in trouble after his third year. They were in trouble in terms of how they perceived hiring him. Now here he is with 1,000 career wins. Not all of them at Duke. There's some of them at Army. There was also a period of time from about 2000 to 2008 where the relationship with the media was okay. And in that regard, too, he's been able to kind of soften up just a bit, which has helped a lot. And you see that come out much more now. He has his own radio show on Sirius. I think that's helped him. And to his credit, he's been able, again, the USA basketball thing has given him some NBA thought. He's adapted that to his program. And to stay in anything for a long time, you have to be adaptable. You have to be able to find out what is working at the moment while also maintaining your own personal standard of how you do things. He's done that. I give him all the credit. It's interesting how his staff guys have stayed with him a long time. Finally, Chris Collins finally decided to go to Northwestern. Finally, Steve Wojciechowski finally took a job and went to Marquette. Now, Johnny Dawkins was with him for a long time before he took the Stanford job. So he's had his assistant coaches, when they've been on staff, they have stayed for a while before then going someplace else. They have not just jumped at the first opportunity they've had. 1,000 wins. 1,000 anything's pretty incredible, really. Yeah, deserves a lot of credit. Like I said, that day with he and Joe at Eisenhower Auditorium, that was a day I think any of us who were there that day will never forget, sitting there that day and watching the two of them with Reese. And Reese Davis did a tremendous job that day. Tremendous. But to see them up there together talking about it, there's one segment that really stuck out to me, and this is on the Mike Krzyzewski side. It's about leadership. And, of course, we've always known, you know, the early days with Joe, how Mike Reed and Steve Smear, hey, look, there's a problem. We'll take care of it. That kind of leadership you can't put a price on. Because when you're a coach and you have great leadership, it then really allows you to coach and not babysit. That's big. And Mike Krzyzewski was talking about one of the strongest leaders he ever had was Shane Battier. And what a pleasure it was to coach that team, because Shane Battier would take care of the locker room. Shane Battier would say things to other players in practice and did all the other, and he said Mike Krzyzewski could then sit back, and he talked about the ability to just sit there and coach, because there was something off his plate he didn't have to worry about because he knew Shane Battier had it. It's one of the things I remember in that conversation above all that day that really stuck out to me, the value of leadership, where a coach doesn't have to be the entire tone setter and the coach doesn't have to be a babysitter. You can become a much more effective coach when all you have to do is coach. And without question, Mike Krzyzewski is one of the best ever. Come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Okay, today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com, and we're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Right. Did you watch the Pro Bowl, Steve?
I did.
Numbers are way down.
Well, of course it's going to be way down. It was on ESPN.
NBC carried it the last 2 years, had a 7.7 and then a 6.7 last year. ESPN with a 5.6.
Right. Well, what do you expect? It's ESPN's cable. Those are cable numbers.
I don't know. 7.7 for broadcast TV even in 2013 doesn't sound that impressive compared to what games have been getting.
Last year, 7.7 was opposite the Grammy Awards.
Well, this year it's opposite the SAG, Miss Universe.
Yeah, but it was on cable.
Well,
on ESPN.
I'll tell you where the big cable numbers might have been.
And it's going to be on cable on ESPN for the next several years. It's not switching around over-air TV. Over-the-air TV is not handling the Pro Bowl anymore.
It's on
ESPN repeatedly for the next few years.
I wonder if it was a little bit of an issue with Sons of Liberty on History Channel too.
It doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter.
I just find it interesting. It is still the most watched of all of the major sports All-Star games, and it went up against the NHL All-Star game too. Not that that was going to draw from it. I'm just an observation of what it went up against.
Well, at one point there was more scoring in the NHL All-Star game. 17-12. I actually saw a few minutes of that,
which was on NBC Sportsnet.
Yes, and that included no checking and lots of just freewheeling. I mean, move a dude out from front of the
no. Now, being a hockey fan, was that entertaining to watch that way?
No. Oh, it's a contact sport. It's skating. It's contact. It's passing. It's contact. I mean, it's a physical game with some beautiful fast pace to it. That's fine. It's an All-Star game. I got what I expected. It's a meaningless exhibition. Pro Bowl meaningless exhibition. But it's entertaining, and I find it to be more entertaining than other things that are on. So what the heck? I don't care. Yeah, they divide up the teams. Don't care about how they divide up the teams. You just watch and go along. I mean, try not to take certain things in life too serious.
Well, here's
advice there.
Here's a maybe somewhat not so serious situation, but the college football playoff being pushed hard, I guess, by ESPN to change the dates of their games, and they'd rather go with games played on Saturday rather than New Year's Eve.
What is
New Year's Eve is a Thursday, I believe.
Why are they playing on New Year's Eve?
They are playing the Cotton and Orange Bowls on New Year's Eve this year. ESPN is pushing the college football playoff to shift its 15 semifinals from their current date of December 31st. With games played in the Cotton Bowl and Orange Bowl to January 2nd, and that will be played on Saturday rather than New Year's Eve. That seems to make a lot of sense to me. I don't understand why. I don't know why they have New Year's Eve.
Hold on a second here.
Okay, holding on.
This goes completely against what you've said.
I know that.
Now it makes sense to you.
These aren't bowl games. I'm sorry. I do not consider these bowl games. I know they have a bowl game name to them, but they're not bowl games. They're semifinal games. They can be called the Cotton Bowl. They can be called the Orange Bowl. They can be called the Boo Boo Bowl for all I care. They're not real bowl games, as opposed to my rule of not playing any bowl games past January 1st. These are separate. I don't consider that a violation of my bowl rule. Just before you get excited there, I know where you're going with that.
Hey.
And you don't want to play bowl. You don't want to play these games on New Year's Eve. Too much stuff going on.
I'm not doing anything New Year's Eve.
Well, that's your fault.
Hopefully I'm someplace warm. The semifinals will be played in the Orange Bowl and Cotton Bowl are scheduled for New Year's Eve. The NFL's regular season includes on Sunday the 3rd.
I mean, looking at the New Year's Eve television ratings for New Year's Rockin' Eve from 11:30 to 12 o'clock, if the Orange Bowl runs long, it could really be hampered by some of those numbers. I'm not joking by that. Those were amazing numbers that that show got on New Year's Eve.
Why aren't they on New Year's Day? It's a Friday this year.
I don't understand that either. But I
Why? I know why. Okay. I know why they aren't. Okay. I know why they aren't. Okay, hold on. I do know why. I forgot. The Rose Bowl always gets the 5 o'clock slot on New Year's Eve.
So
on New Year's Day, I mean.
So they wouldn't be able to play the Cotton back to back with the Orange.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, that's the situation.
What I would do would be this. I would play one semifinal at 1 o'clock and one at 8:30 at night.
I'd play them both on Saturday, January 2nd. And is that the end of the regular season in the NFL for the next year? I would think
it
that
is,
the,
but it is the third is the end of the regular
right.
season.
So you don't have a conflict with NFL playoffs. I think this is a mistake by not moving these games. Now you're still going to get TV ratings. Don't get me wrong. And the difference is not. But I think it's a mistake by playing them on New Year's Eve rather than playing them on January 2nd.
Because I think they're New Year's Eve whenever the Rose Bowl's not involved.
A source said the semifinals would rate higher on January 2nd. As it stands, the semifinals will be played in advance of the Sugar, Rose, and Fiesta, which are all Friday, January 1st.
Right.
See, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, first of all, I agree with them. I would play it on the 2nd because, first of all, Saturday's a college football day for most people intellectually to begin with.
And get all the other bowl games out of the way before you have the semifinal and championship game.
Yeah, whatever. But that's but playing it on the 2nd to Saturday, and also would close the gap to 9 days before the championship, as opposed to 11.
I think that's too long.
Well, it was about the same this year. It was, 10 days?
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, I understand why they did it, but I thought that was too long, too. I honestly think it might have taken a little bit of the luster away from it. Not that you could take much of it away for a first year, but if you would have had it within 7, even 8 days, I think it would have been much more hype to it. That's like playing the Super Bowl 2 weeks after the, oh, wait, they do that.
Okay, so for 1 year in 2016, when the calendar falls a certain way, the idea is to consider moving the game from Thursday. So it's a one-year thing. It's not New Year's Eve every year.
No, it just happens to fall that way this particular year.
Because New Year's Day is on a Friday. See, next year, and then the year after that, because it's leap year, it's going to go New Year's Eve. New Year's Day goes from a Friday to a Sunday.
Right.
So you're going to have those games on the 2nd.